So I'm Justin Norwood, as Matt said, and I'm going to talk to you about a library I've been developing. It should be on Hackish, but it's not yet because it's not quite perfect. It's probably will be, but it's a nice idea, and I do hope to tidy up soon. So the library is called Place, and it is drawn out of some experience actually trying to write a structured editor. So for the main line of my PhD, what I'm playing with at the moment is an interactive editor for GHC External Core. And so this is a screenshot from the application. It was working, I'd actually have it running. And what this application lets you do is load up some external core file. It lets you navigate around it. So the bit in yellow and the bit at the end of the thick lines here indicates which subterm the core language you're currently looking at. It lets you then apply transformations, simplifications, eventually induction strategies and other things to the current subterm that you're focusing on. And it does all this without parsing anything other than the original core file. What's going on here is just a presentation of an AST. And any operations that you apply to it are done directly upon that AST. So you've got literally a direct model view going on here. And what you can see here is there are three different views of the core term that you're currently working with. You have like the overall view indicating where your current focus is. You have a view of kind of the variables that you've got in scope. And you've got a view here of the entire tree, and another which also indicates where your current focus is. So while writing this, I kind of hit a bit of a design problem where I was finding I was duplicating a lot of code and didn't have a nice abstraction to deal with not actually creating data types to represent this, but to actually perform this kind of rendering, which also includes where your focus currently is. So I hope most of you are familiar with kind of Zipper-like designs and Hewitt Zipper. If not, I'm going to explain my take on them as well. But underlying this is kind of the Zipper design pattern. So the outline of this talk, I have a couple of preliminaries I want to cover. I'm going to outline a simple GADT Zipper data structure, which underlines the application I've just shown you. I'm going to explain what the problem with rendering is, and then I'm going to explain Place and hopefully how it solves that problem. So does anybody here not understand GADTs, or have not used them, or not seen them? Do I need to explain them? Okay. So GADTs are a fairly recent extension to this GHC Haskell, which are generalized algebraic data types. So if you have a normal Haskell data type, so for example here we have the standard definition for a tree, you can express this in GADT style exactly the same like this, where each constructor essentially becomes a function that describes what it produces. So leaf here always produces a tree of any type A, and a branch takes a tree A, an A, a tree A, and gives you out a tree A. The next natural kind of switch is to think, well, I can talk about the end down here, so what happens if I refine it? So here's a variation on the theme where we have a tree that has a leaf and branches before, but it also has a leaf that is specialised to carry ints, and we're going to say that if you ever create something using the constructor int leaf, you don't have a tree A for any A, or a tree A for the A that you put in, you are forced to have a tree event. And where this becomes useful is when you start pattern matching on this data constructor. So for example, in some flatten function that takes a tree and collapses it to the list of all the elements, when you pattern match on the int leaf constructor, well, you suddenly know that the tree A that you got in is actually a tree int, and so that the int that's being carried in the int leaf is safe to return in the list value. So this kind of narrows the type of this A to the int that's actually tied to the constructor. And I'm going to be using this kind of narrowing a fair amount in the library. Okay. So I include some code snippets in this talk. So Place is a library that's designed to solve a problem. And so, of course, with any library, you have a user that has to use the library. So any code that's in blue is user code. Any code that's in green is code that actually belongs to the library itself. And I have a lot of also generated code as well, and that kind of appears in orange. And hopefully the idea is that there isn't very much blue code. The green code has nice type signatures, but it's probably unreadable, and the orange code is just completely unreadable. And you can kind of remember these, because I have a nice picture of a blue user, I have a nice picture of a green library, and I have a nice picture of an orange being generated. Good. Right. So we're going to start with something simple. So before, the motivation for this was the whole of GHC external core. We have something a bit simpler than that, which is just a small programming language. So we have the language is called LAM. We have this data LAM, which basically just represents the top of a program that we're dealing with. So whenever we have the LAM construct, we know we have a complete program. We have expressions. Expressions are abstractions, which have a name variable, a type, and some sub-expression. Standard kind of application of two expressions together. And the var integer, the integer is a Debreu index to the abstractions. So I'll give you an example of what this means later, but basically, if the variable is zero, it refers to the nearest abstraction. If the variable is one, it refers to the next abstraction out. And types are just some random unit of type and an array type. So I'm going to be building a zipper or a cursor structure over this. What you'll notice here is that this type is heterogeneous. We have lambdas, we have expressions, and we have types. And our cursor is going to want to be able to point at either a lamb, an expression, or a type. We're not going to try and navigate inside the string or the integer. Okay. Right. So an example, if we have this data structure, which is an application of an x of some arrow type to itself, and an abstraction of a y and a z, so two variables. You can see that the var 0 there actually refers to the z, and the var 1 refers to the y. And the idea is we want to be able to take a data structure looking like this, and eventually we want to render it looking something like this. Okay, stop me if I'm going too fast or I get confusing. Right, and here's the same thing viewed in yet another way. So this is kind of how we're going to view most of our things. We have the data structure as a tree. And we can imagine if we're dealing with a cursor or a zipper, the kind of the focus of the user at the moment is currently at the top of the LAM. What's going to happen is our user will want to move around this tree, maybe they will move down to the application node. And what we want to do is support basically all the one operations on this subpart of the tree. So we don't want to be navigating down to the tree, then doing the operation and navigating up. And so what we're going to do is when the user decides to move down, is split the tree into two parts. We'll have the bit that we call it, which is what you're currently looking at, and we'll have a context. And so the it bit is in blue, because this is code the user might write. The constructor up here is like the original LAM constructor, and it doesn't actually have a value down here at all. You can imagine there's a hole there. And so this is kind of some generated data structure. So when we move to the right, what we're going to do is we're going to rip off this application, and we're going to keep track of all of this subtree, but we're going to mark the fact that right-hand side has got a hole in it, and that's going to push that onto our context. So we now have a context consisting of two elements. So we have where we currently are, we have the thing that's immediately above us with its subchildren, and then we have the thing that's immediately above that. Right.
Why don't I have the lamb on top of the app there?
So the original paper by Hewitt, and I think a lot of the other designs for zippers, they actually make the data structure that represents this thing with the hole also carry the up field. Yeah? What I kind of decided, because I'm possibly a little bit too puritanical, is you're confusing two things there. You're confusing kind of the context itself, which is the kind of the data constructor above you with the hole and the sub value, with also the navigation all the way up. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have a little data structure that ties these things together. Okay. It also makes a slight. I should explain this. So we have our data expression that we defined before. So for example, the extraction constructor. The string we're going to keep in the abstraction constructor the whole time, but we might want to navigate into the type of expression. So we create a type of context, or kind of one-hole context for these for this constructor. And so we can either be sitting inside the type and wanting to move up to the abstraction, or we can be sitting inside the expression and wanting to move up to the abstraction. So both of these constructors take the original string, which is abstraction held. The one that's sitting inside the expression holds the type as a value inside it. It doesn't hold the expression. And the type of the context represents both where you currently are and where you're going to. And because we've got a tree that can go across possibly multiple different types, we need to keep track of, you know, the type that we're currently in and the type of the parent. And so an expression to abstraction mode, well, you're currently inside an expression, and when you move up, you're going to move inside an abstraction, and so we've got an expression on the right-hand side. And the type case, we're currently looking at a type, and we're going to move up into an expression. So the question is kind of, why don't I have the thing moved on top? I've separated that behavior out into a separate component. And so we have this kind of simplified notion of a path. And the path contains where it starts and where it ends as types. And kind of if you think about a LAM program, I said a LAM program is always going to be rooted at a LAM. So the end in our example is always going to be LAM. And so this is a lot like a list. You have the nil or the end case. So stop is always a path of any type to any type. And a step takes a context to move you one step, path to move you the rest of the steps, and gives you a path from the start to the end. So if you imagine this context that we have here, the application node, our start type is going to, start type is going to be an expression, which is the type of this whole. Our mid type, which is chaining the context of the path, is going to be expression as well, because we're moving, because we have an expression above. And the end type is going to be the LAM. And so you can, this is kind of the tree, and this is kind of what it would look like in code written out. Right.
This the context I type, is, that's the group just going to that's tied to expression X.
This
is word that every
this context I is for the entire LAM example. So there are two constructors here, one for type to abstraction, one for expression to abstraction. So there will be one of these constructors for every possible whole in all of the data constructors in the original language.
Oh, across all the data types?
Yes. So for example, there will be type to arrow, type something context I,
right.
Type to type, for example.
Right.
So this basically collapses all of the wholes into one type that we can case over. Right. So a simple cursor then, and this is kind of a pictorial representation, you would have a cursor is kind of what you're currently looking at, is this thing, and the context as well that you're in, which is a path from what you're currently looking at all the way back up to the root type LAM. So I'm going to try and now explain the rendering problem with assuming this is the underlying design example that you're using. So the idea is to go from a cursor that looks like this to this string. Well, kind of rendering, normally you would think you would just do some kind of recursive function to render each kind of normal sub-expression that you would write. So to render each of these sub-expressions, well, to render a lambda abstraction, you put a lambda in the name of the variable there, and then you have a hole for the string that goes to the left and a hole for the string that goes to the right. This is all kind of very straightforward. You can write a rendering function to do this. You can collapse it, and you'll get out the string that looks like that. Now the point is, here, we've got what the user's current focus is. So what we want to do is to take that string and wrap it in some arrows to say, this is where the user is currently looking. We then want to take that string and pass it into our context. So our context in the application, it can use the normal recursive function to render this bit down here. We then have to render the bracket, the bit down here, and then we have to take the string from over here to render the right-hand side and stick a bracket in as well. And so we attach the string, you can imagine you attach the string to the right hand side where the hole is, and you can collapse that to get the next level of the rendered string. And then you can repeat this where you take this, attach it to where the hole is, and it will collapse up into that. And so that would be kind of what I want to do. I want to render these trees to get this result out. So if you think about what's going on here, we have in this side of the tree and down here, we've basically got a way of taking the user's data constructors and producing a string. I've put it under some arbitrary monad n because you might want some environment carrying around with you, and certainly in this case we do. And so you've got to write basically three functions, one for rendering expressions, one for rendering types, and one for rendering the LAM right at the top, because you have three different types of things going along here. We also need a function that takes the current string and sticks the angles over it, so we know that where the cursor currently is. So I call that kind of render cursor. And then we also need, for all of our data construct, all of our contexts, we need a way of basically taking a context with a subtree and a string for the whole and producing a string as well. And we call that render context. So I think this isn't too much work. But what happens when I was doing the original motivating example application is what you end up is a code that looks a bit like this. And you can simplify it using your favorite combinator library and a few other things. But just for the abstraction case, you have to render the expression of the abstraction, and we'll just do that by rendering the type recursively, and then because we need to add binding information, we add binding about the variable and rendering the expression recursively. But then you have to think about, oh, I also need to provide a way of rendering this in the contexts. So we've got two contexts for abstractions. We have the type, one where you're in the type, and one where you're in the expression. When you render one side the when you're inside the type, well, you just have a recursive value passed to you, so you just need to force that. You still need to do the recursive call in the render expression, and then you return a string. And in the case where you're inside an abstraction inside the expression, you have to use the recursive call to render type. You have the recursive value that gives you the string for the expression, but you also need to add the binding information to it. And again, you return a string. And so what's going on here is, well, there's a lot of duplication. You also have this binding code that's littered around, and here it might not look too complicated. When you're dealing with the whole of GHC core, you've got two or three different ways of adding binding information, and this is only one rendering traversal. In my example application, I had three. So you have all of this binding information that needs propagating and making consistent during your rendering traversals. You also have all of these three return string lines, which look very, very, very similar. And kind of this annoyed me. Basically, you've got two levels of duplication going on here. You've got this kind of duplication of the binding information that's going to happen across every rendering traversal that you do, and is also happening across these kind of constructor calls. And you also have this duplication of the render string as well. So these are the problems that I kind of wanted to solve or fix or get rid of somehow. And so I kind of got a bit distracted and wrote Place to solve these problems. So Place, underlying it is, or central to it, is a type class called Language. And this type class basically describes the primitives for the underlying language that you want to deal with. And it uses associated data types to represent some features, and it uses just normal associated functions for the rest. So you've seen one of the kind of associated types already, which is the type of context. Place then takes a definition of this language and has a load of library functions that are written in terms of it that provide features like moving around your cursor generically. They also provide the cursor data structure as well, which I'll explain in a bit more detail. But you can see that so the cursor structure is parameterized both by the language and by the context it's in. So the question is then, how do you get one of these languages from the language the user might write? Well, I have some scripts that will automatically generate you a very large quantity of code and will actually give you an instance of the language for your particular language that you're dealing with. And you'll see that the instance of context here has got a signed wrapper on it because I'm using this. Actually works in GHC 6.3 and data type construct 6.8.3. So there's a little bit of indirection going on while I wait for data families to become implemented perfectly. Right, so the place solution. This is how you reduce place. You declare your language, you generate a load of boilerplate code, you describe the lexical binding structures, you implement some traversals, and you hook it into your application.
What effect is defining the binding structures?
What effect is that?
Yeah, well.
Hopefully I'll answer that question when I get to it.
Okay.
If I don't, yell at me.
We had some sort of add binding stuff in some code to show.
Right, so the code language, you've seen this all already. This is the language that we want to deal with. Are you happy with that?
So in your previous slide, you generated code, you had an instance language lamb. Why didn't you have an instance language X and language type 2? So
okay.
Kind of lamb is special here.
Yes, lamb is special. So I'm saying that this is a language, and what I'm saying is that this language can be represented by the data type lamb. So data type lamb is like the root of the language, but all three of these make up the language lamb. I should really have a lamb in like italics.
So you somehow tell place that This is the root type.
This is the root type, or this is kind of what all of this. Whenever you talk about a cursor, you're going to be talking about a cursor of lamb, even if it's pointing at an expression or a type. Okay. You can, and if you go back, you'll see that the cursor is parameterized by three things. One of them is the type class instance of the language, and one of them is where you're currently looking, and the X I will come to later if I have time. Okay. So lamb has got two meanings. It's got both. It's only one data type, but it means both that constructor, and it also means the root of the language. And so, you'll have cursors of lamb that point to expressions of types. So declaring the language, so this is the language lamb. Generating boilerplate, so this is actually how you generate the boilerplate. I use template Haskell to do this because it has rarefy, which gives me a description of the data types, and run IO to then print it out to a file. So there are three generation scripts that you can invoke. Language gen gives you the implementation of the type class language. Adapter gen gives you some adapters that are used for the traversals. And persistence gives you a load of code for persisting your cursors to strings and reading them back again as well. So it's quite a tedious task to do by hand. And so this uses template Haskell. The dollars are splices, which basically say run this code at compile time. Language adaptive systems have gone through. So here we're saying this is the root type, this is what the type classes are going to be instances of, which are all lamb, and this is the set of navigable types. So these are the types that I want the cursor to possibly be able to point at. And so I want the cursor to be able to point at lambs, expressions, or types. This then, just when we compile this, it goes away and generates a load of source code, source files, which look like that. So this is the instance for language, this is the traversal code, this is for persistence. It's not that much, it's not trivial to do though when you kind of want to do it by hand. Yes?
So why do you generate code rather than just having template Haskell splice it in?
Because I'm generating instances, I'm generating GDTs, and I'm generating associated data type instances as well. And template Haskell doesn't yet support those. Okay. So, binding. Right, I'm redrawing and restyling my tree slightly. So this is also another view of a cursor. You can imagine the user's cursor is currently focused here. These are the three constructors in the context stack. And I want to talk about lexical binding. So when you traverse around this bit of the data structure, you need to know what the variable 0 and the variable 1 refer to as kind of their human names. So the human names are expressed on the abstraction nodes above them. And so whenever we're traversing around here, we know that variable 0 is going to map to x because it's the last thing that we went through. When we're traversing down here, variable 0 is going to map to y, but when we come down here, we have to do a little shift and variable 0 now maps to z and variable 1 now maps to y, which has this kind of structure. And what I wanted is a neat way to express this in place without having to repeat it all over the place. I want to express this kind of binding pattern that's going on. So I have my monad that my traversal is going to happen under with its magical addBinding method, its addBinding function. I wanted to express, I want this addBinding function to be called whenever we kind of make this jump from abstraction down into its expression. And so what I thought is, well, the context's kind of represent that quite nicely. So in place we have a way of expressing a binding hook. So given a language, we can make it a bound language, and the binding hook basically takes a context and the result of doing some traversal and may modify the result of doing that traversal. And so for example, for lamb, we have my monad that does the traversals. Whenever we go into the expression inside an abstraction, we want to add the binding for the string over the whole. And in all other cases, we just want to return the subresult. So for example, whenever we have one of these whenever we have an abstraction that we're going down this way and we have some results, we want to add the binding information to the result. And that just lets me express in one place, very, very neatly, all of that binding information. Given a description of this in this binding hook, we then have a way place has a way of traversing the entire tree. And to do a complete traversal of the tree, you need an instance of a traversal class and a cursor, and you get a value out. Our traversal class is hideously complicated. We have this visit step with a higher rank type, and this visit partial with a higher rank type. We have this kind of rarefied type class that's appearing magically. What's possibly a bit more intuitive is this cursor function, which is basically how to modify the result when you are at the point the user is currently looking at. These two are a bit complicated for anybody really to want to implement themselves. So I think what Place does is it kind of abstracts away from this traversal type class for you and lets you implement some adapters instead. And so these adapters are also generated. And so for example, if we just look at the adapter, so there's an adapter for each type in your language, expressions, language, and type, and there's one function for each constructor, and there's also one function for expressing how you want the data to change when you're going through where the cursor is, where the user is currently looking. And so, for example, if we have, just for the visit abstraction function, if we have this set up as a cursor and the user is currently focused here, for example, when the traversal visits this abstraction node, it will already have done the binding hook for the code down here. And what it will do is it will call the traversal for this subtree and the traversal for this subtree, and it will give you the results for them using the binding information as necessary. So you'll get, basically in this function, you'll get this data structure, the result from the left subtree of doing the traversal, the result from doing this right subtree traversal, and all you have to do is just say how to glue these together. And in the same way, when you're over, when the traversal gets this kind of context representing the abstraction, it will also give you the collapsed result for the entire abstraction. But obviously this doesn't include any information about where the cursor currently is. But because this will have gone through the cursor's point, gone through where the cursor currently is focused in that modification function, the cursive result from calling this that you provided to visit abs will actually have the brackets included. So that will be passed in as the second argument. And the first argument will just have the tau, which is called from a cursor view representing the unit. And so what these functions basically are is just disassembling all of the constructors and giving you the recursive call results just automatically. So the user only needs to provide the glue code, and this works then in the case where they don't have a context or where they are in context.
Question?
Yes?
So why are you passing in X rather than the arguments of constructor? I mean, obviously you need X in this case, but your definition of visit tabs is always going to know that it's got an abs as the
right.
Argument.
So in this case, visit abs is going to have an abs as the argument,
yeah.
But it's not going to know about the fact that this had the cursor pointing at it. And so it can't do the if the user did the recursive call.
No, I realize that the user can't do the recursive call, but why don't you pass in, instead of passing in X, why don't you pass in string there?
Here.
In visit. Why isn't the first parameter just the string X?
Oh, why is it not that piece of information as opposed to the whole thing?
Put another way. Is the first argument of visit apps always an apps?
Right, so the first argument to visit abs is always an abs.
Okay.
So that was a design decision. You could have passed in explicitly just the deconstruction points. That would, of course, require writing more code to understand not just the thing, it would require writing a bit more automated boilerplate code.
Right.
There's also possibly the case that you actually need the recursive structure down here to render this thing correctly.
Okay.
I could tenuously come up with some arguments.
If the argument to visit apps is always apps, you could pass the arguments to apps instead of
the apps itself,
and then visit apps wouldn't have to do the pattern match at the top.
It kind of makes it
a little bit
neater.
So why not have one visit for all of X rather than having a bunch
of visits? You have an arbitrary number of extra arguments depending on the recursive arguments.
Constructor.
Because you have the recursive arguments. So, for example, visit var doesn't have any recursive arguments because there's no way you can recursively go down to.
Recursive arguments?
So if you think about the tree, var has no way that you can visit below it.
You can't write a single argument to a fold either. I mean, it's got to be one type constructor.
Yeah.
Because the types change.
Yeah. Oh, but this notion of a recursive.
I'm using recursive badly.
Do you mean one recursive or something?
I mean
that no X is reachable at all.
I mean that from a var,
yeah.
the traversal of the tree to do rendering has got nowhere to go underneath the bar.
There's no more X's under there.
There's no expressions, there's no types, and there's no lines underneath it.
It's a leaf.
Yeah, it's a leaf.
Is it just the arguments to a fault?
Yeah.
Right, except, with, yeah, except you're also giving a copy of the data.
Yeah,
data at the same
and
time.
Also the fold is handling.
Right. No, there's something
well.
Different to do with whether there's recursive arguments.
Okay, that's good. Sorry, that's my right. So yeah, so I should have just set up. Right, and so all of that rendering code before that was quite huge. Again, you could simplify this using your favorite Combinator library. Now, just to visit abstraction, you pull the string out. You have the tie and the X, which are done by the traversal. Extract the string values out of them by doing it by running another monad and just return the single string. And just also to give an example, to modify a string where you've got the cursor current location, you have to have the first argument to the type class resolution to work, but the second argument is just the string, or is the computation that produces the string underneath. So you just extract that and tag the arrows onto it. So that's kind of just implementing a traversal. Right, and then the library has the complete traversal function. If you provide instances of the adapters, then you get an instance of the traversal class. We've provided instances of those adapters and bounds, and therefore getting the rendered string out of the cursor is literally as easy as running a complete traversal and then just running the monad constructor and software. So that's basically that. I would have a quick demo, but technology has failed me, unfortunately. So the other bit I can talk about is, because I've shown you this cursor and I've shown you how to basically traverse over it, I've not actually shown you anything about moving, and kind of moving the cursor is quite an important thing. So what I'm going to give is kind of, place movement is done in two levels. There's kind of low-level primitives, which provide witnesses for the types of the changes you do movements. And then there are also, on top of that, is a load of generalized movement, which is just basically using Monad Plus quite a lot to tie together a lot of maybe values. So the underlying movements, if you have, again, the abstraction constructor, you can imagine there are basically four ways of moving around this. You can either move from an abstraction into a type, you can move from an abstraction into an expression, or you can move from a type up into an abstraction constructor, and vice versa. And so we have another, what becomes eventually an associated data type movement that represents the movements down directly. And so the parameters to a movement constructor are the direction you're moving, the type you're moving from, the type you're moving to. And so if you're moving from an abstraction to a type, you move from an expression to a type. And then we have a general way of moving up as well, or representing upwards movements, which is take a downward movement and then flip the direction. And that should be fairly straightforward. Given those constructors, there's an easy way of moving up and down a tree. To move up a tree, actually, you don't need movements at all. You just have, if you have a context and some value to put in the hole, you can plug in the value in the hole and rebuild it. And if you have...
Don't you need a new context?
Moving up?
Yeah.
No, because I'm chaining context in the list, you only ever care about moving up one step, which is taking context and the value.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that's moving up. The moving down takes a movement and a value, and it might give you back a context that's in the new value going back up to the original place and the value itself. This might fail because the constructor that the movement is talking about may not match with the constructor that's in the type itself. And so, for example, if we're moving from an abstraction to a type, well, because we now know, because of the type parameters on this, we now know here that the type of the A will be expression, so we can case on the value of here to get out the expression, and if the expression is actually the abstraction that we expect, then we return some value, and otherwise we just fail, and the same for kind of abstraction to expression. So kind of what's going on here is there's a slight guarantee that's provided by the type system that the type that we're moving from and the type that we're moving to are preserved, and then there's a slight invariant that's preserved by the generated code that actually makes sure that constructors match up with the data type constructors as well. So I've not quite got everything guaranteed in the type system that I would possibly want, but it's close enough. Right, one final thing is bookmarks. So a lot of but I've not seen any cursor libraries like Hewitt-Stiffels or anything like that that actually deal with, well, how do I represent another place in the tree other than where I currently am, and actually deal with what happens if I mutate the tree in a nice way consisting these. Because all of my things are kind of essentially data constructors and values, I can reason about them a little bit more explicitly, a little bit more, which doesn't have any nice tricks, but just kind of falls out. So if we have a cursor, and we're currently focused here, and we want to represent a bookmark to this location, well, there is a shortest unique path between where we currently are and this location of following the up and the down links. So if we follow the lowest number of up links to get to the common route, and then the shortest number of down links to get down, we have basically a path from where we are to our bookmark location. And we can represent this as basically a pair of paths. So before I showed you the path of contexts, the path data type is actually slightly more generalized to talk about paths of something. And so a route consists of a pair of paths. It consists of a path going upwards and a path going downwards. And with one of these, you can make your cursor represent, basically hold a route to some other arbitrary location in the tree. So the type parameters on cursor now are L is the language that we're abstracting over, X is the is some other location in the tree, and A is where you're currently looking. And in place, all of the movement operators that are generalized and exposed to the user, and all of the kind of more primitive operations, actually will persist this X across operations. So for example, generic move left, it takes a cursor that's looking somewhere with some bookmark location, and well, you won't know what the B is that's returned, that's given to you in an existential context of the witness, but you know with absolute certainty that where you were looking at as a bookmark stays in exactly the same place. And what you can do is you can extract one of these routes at any time from a cursor, you can then reset it to the current location, go away, do some more movements, get out the new route, and glue that to the old one that you previously had. This is how you kind of persist your bookmarks together. The other quite neat trick is, because of the way these are always generated within place, if you want to know that if an operation you're currently doing is going to invalidate a bookmark, well, all you have to do is check whether this first component is empty or not, because place guarantees that it will only create up movements if it has to. And so if you've got a bookmark, even one that's being glued together by other things, that only consists of downward movements, you know that when you're doing the current modification, you are absolutely certainly going to be modifying something that bookmark talks about. So, quick summary. Kind of presented a cursor library that allows you to have a heterogeneous underlying language. There are scripts to generate all of the copious amounts of boilerplate. There's a simple way of specifying the binding structures. There's a traversal for a complete traversal over the tree, taking into account where your current focus is. There's other traversals that I'm kind of implementing as I need them, and it also has the bookmark strategy or structure. So, thank you very much for listening. Any questions? Yeah?
I've produced a tool much like one you started out working on in a couple of places. I've proposed a tool much like the one you're working on in a couple of places. I've been really looking forward to the chance to work with something like it.
Right.
And I realise this is a bit hopeful when you like this is something you can play with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, will you be keeping a version history of what you've worked on so that you can effectively toy around more with the operations and build a script out of the tactics you're having to start supporting and see if it's more involved from modifications without having to worry too much about breaking your existing work, would you say?
Sorry, about the case library first.
The
editor itself. That editor is very experimental at the moment. It's not using this. It's basically using the cursor. I have some ideas for direction we're going to go with that. We should have chats about that.
Any more for anyone?
How difficult would it be to refit this onto something like Haskell and actually produce a really useful editor that allowed you to walk around Haskell terms directly?
So how easy would it be to take something like this and use it completely generally?
Apply close to Haskell itself.
Okay, so you want a structured editor for Haskell. How easy would it be to do? The simplest possible level, Haskell source sets is a fairly simple set of data types. I think you could probably apply that to it, write the rendering code yourself. I mean, it would be absolutely painful to use because you would have to navigate across every single kind of sub-expression where that wouldn't always be natural, but it would be possible to write for it.
In which case, how would you solve those problems?
So you would have to build another layer of abstraction for movement that kind of hides the kind of maybe the indirection steps that would happen in all the movement you wouldn't expect, but it's completely doable. It would just take time. There's questions of whether that would actually be useful in the long run. Expression editing, if the editing at the expression level in a structured editor is actually quite painful. Well, certainly in all the experiments that I've done to do this, I might be.
Okay, I'm going to go.